chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating.
I'm thrilled to have Tom Kosnick on the show today. Tom is the president and co-founder of Visus Group.
Well, Tom Kosnick, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so excited about having this time with you today.
Thank you. I'm excited as well. Of course, we've known each other for years and years, and I listened to a handful of your previous podcasts. Congratulations on, is it 200 plus podcasts now?
I think we're close to 250. So that's 250 episodes now. It's been a fun journey.
That's fantastic. And happy to be 251.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, as you said, Tom, we've known each other for a while now. In fact, I kind of went back. We were introduced in 2012 by our mutual friend, Keith Jacobs.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Keith Jacobs. And Keith ran St. Louis staffing here in St. Louis. And he and I were at an event together. And he said to me, he said, Lisa, have you guys ever considered, you know, being part of a presence roundtable? And he said, you know, I know this guy in Chicago, Tom Kosnick. And he goes, I really think, and I guess he was part of your roundtable and he had received so much value from that. And so then, you know, of course, you and Catherine co-founded your company together. Greg and I co-founded Technology Partners together. So I immediately came and said, Greg, you might want to be part of this presence roundtable. And so he did. He jumped in 2013, and it's been invaluable. You've also become one of our trusted advisors. We have a strategic advisory board, Tom, and you are part of that team as well. So it's just been a great, great relationship. So kudos and thank you to our mutual friend, Keith Jacobs, for that introduction.
Yes, yes. Ten years. It's surprising how quickly 10 years goes by.
Yeah, we've both seen a lot of change in that 10 years, haven't we, Tom?
And it's happening faster by the day.
Yes, it is. Well, you, with your organization, you run these presence roundtables for CEOs of staffing firms, CMOs, CFOs. We're going to talk all about that. But you and Catherine co-founded it. And your daughter, Emma, which is so fun, is now like coordinating those roundtables and then is also your operations manager. So you got a little nepotism going on in the firm, which is awesome.
Lisa, I went from having one boss to having two bosses.
I love that.
We love having Emma in the business. Clients love Emma. Clients love Kate. They put up with me.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome.
And we are very fortunate. We have fantastic clients.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to dig in that. Well, we've got something else in common too, Tom, and this immediately bonded us, right? When we first met, you've got a son with Down syndrome, Andrew.
Yes.
And we have a daughter, Allie, with Down syndrome. And tell our listeners, what did your Andrew just did something really spectacular, just finished his 25th performance, I think?
He is in, he's very talented. He's a very talented young man. And he's, Andrew is actually dual diagnosis. So he has Down syndrome and autism. And he is in a theater group. He loves music. And he's been in that theater group, I think, since he's been 10 years old or so. And he's currently 28 years old. But he's been in 28 theater performances. He's been in a couple of shorts, that 45-minute long movies that you see on the big screen. They submitted for awards. I'm not sure where it placed. And Andrew is also a very talented artist. He has an art therapist that works with him. And he's got a little website in a larger group of artists. And he is now, Lisa, he is now accepting commissions. And I think he's got like 5 commissions in the queue for his art. And
fabulous.
He's living his best life. I shared with Greg that he's in a Scylla in the Chicagoland area. And oh my gosh, he's living his best life. He's really doing well, and we're very proud of everything that he's been able to accomplish.
I love that. Well, you know, I mean, Tom, what I love about it is you and Kate have not like put limits on him. I mean, really, you know, and we have always treated Allie like our other two children. And, you know, because of that, I mean, she's got more confidence in her pinky that a lot of people have in their whole bodies. But, you know, I just love the thinking of the possibilities, right? And not the limitations.
Amen. And
yeah. I know you would say this about Andrew, but I say all the time, Allie's been one of my greatest teachers in life. I've learned so much from her.
Yes. Yes. And somebody who constantly helps me with patience.
Yes.
you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I do. I do. Well, we could do a whole podcast. Maybe we'll come back and do a podcast on that subject, which would be great. But tell me a little bit, Tom, about how you grew up. I don't think I know this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in Chicagoland?
Detroit.
Detroit. Okay.
Yeah, I grew up in the Detroit area, a city of Warren. And when I was a child growing up, Warren had more Polish Catholic people than any other city in the United States. And the Hamtramck inside the city of Detroit was predominantly Polish. And a lot of people moved from Hamtramck. The kids are the next generation from Hamtramck to Warren. So I grew up in Warren. I grew up with, I'm one of 10. My mom had a child. I grew up with 9 of us. My mom had a child that passed away 6 months or so. He had spinal bifida and some other challenges. But so I come from a very big Polish Catholic family. There was always a congregation, Lisa, at our house. We had a pool in the backyard. We had a baseball diamond in the backyard. We had a badminton area. We created games. There was always a basketball hoop on the front of the garage. So
what a rich childhood, seriously, Tom.
And the other thing, I was talking to somebody about this earlier. When I was a kid growing up, it really was a community. Obviously, there was the faith community, so there were a lot of families and friends that we knew that all went to, you know, the local parish. But schools, teachers, neighbors, having neighbors over for dinner, making friends over the fence, all that. We really had a lot of support structure as a child growing up. And of course, as you're a child, you don't realize that support structure. But then as you, like nowadays, a lot of that support structure is gone for the young folks that are growing up. And parents really have to work extra hard to find various support structures for themselves. But it was a time, and it was a whole different time, in terms of what we could do or couldn't do, and had a lot of fun with creativity, a lot of fun creating games and running around at nighttime and things like that. But it was good.
Good childhood. That's awesome.
And I do want to say that growing up in Detroit, nobody took their, I don't know how car mechanics made a living in Detroit, because nobody took their car to a car mechanic. Everybody fixed their own car. So I was seven of 10. And so I was far enough down the food chain where my older siblings, they'd drive a car into the ground. And then they'd either, oh, Tom, you could have that car if you pay for the license. And so, Lisa, I have had, by the time I was a senior in high school, I think I had a dozen different cars, or I had owned a dozen different cars. And of course, as a boy growing up, loved to work with our hands. So we had a chance [S2] Sure. [S1] To tear engines apart, put them back together, tear carburetors apart, put them back together. And that also, oh my gosh, I mean, kids are on these things, you know, all day long, and they're not working with their hands and tearing things apart and putting them back together again. And I'll tell you, I had a 1966 Chevy Nova four door. It was a 194 straight six. And we rebuilt the engine in the garage of our house. And there's no better feeling in the world than after putting that engine back together and turning that car key, and that engine starts up.
And it actually starts.
Yeah, it actually starts. And a sense of accomplishment. And, oh my gosh, we rebuilt an engine.
How cool.
So I wish we had more of that stuff for young people today.
I do too. And we'll talk about technological advances a little bit, because I know you and I have seen a lot happen in the staffing world, right? There are great things about it, and then I think we've lost a few things, you know, because of that. Because I agree with you. Kids aren't like making up games and, you know, doing the kind of things that we had to do to occupy ourselves, you know, when we were younger. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how all that plays out. But, you know, let's kind of move in. You've got a BA in psychology, you've got a Master of Divinity in theology, and a Master's in Organizational Development. So today you run your group that you started in 1995, but you didn't start there, Tom. So tell me a little bit about this career journey. And I kind of had to laugh because you said you really ended up in the staffing industry because you drew the shortest straw, which I find really funny. So tell me, you know, how did that all come about?
Yeah, good things and short straws, Lisa, is the moral of the story.
That's good.
So the name of the company is Visus Group, and Visus is a Latin word that means vision. And we help entrepreneurs see the world differently. And if you want to grow your business, you've got to change. And in order to change, you have to see things differently and predominantly see yourself differently. But I had a couple of uncles that were Catholic priests. One that was a Maryknoll missionary, and one that was spent X number of years in the Philippines as a missionary. And then I had a uncle that was a diocesan priest, and he was a professor of moral theology, and was well published and all that. And those two uncles of mine had a real positive impact on myself. Coupled with, you know, my folks were volunteered in a number of different things. So they had a certain social consciousness about themselves. You know, of course we were, we're faithful churchgoers. So we had a, and all through my childhood growing up, I had a very positive faith experience. And not to have too much of a lesson in here, but for Polish folks, all the main holidays, they're religious holidays. And this goes back to the 1800s when Russia, Prussia, and Germany divided Poland up. And the only place that they were allowed to speak Polish was in the services and in the basements of the Catholic churches and things like that. And so as a result of that, the big part of the population became very, very sort of, I tell people it's sort of like it's sort of like being Jewish. You know, you don't look at Judaism and it's part of an ethnic thing. And so for us, a lot of our big holidays were the religious holidays, and so that had an impact on me. And then I've always had a sense to want to serve. So after I got out of undergraduate school, I took a job. I worked for the Catholic Church for about 10 years, mainly in either director of youth ministry or as a pastoral associate, as a lay person. And my master's of divinity, I was actually studying for ordained ministry. But I got so far through with that journey and realized that was not the calling for me. And so then, but I was too close to finishing. And it's another thing I think that is about my success is that I always finish what I start. So I finished my MDiv and continued to work for a little bit more. Somewhere near the end of my MDiv, I met who I now call Saint Catherine, because she puts up with all my theatrics. And somewhere in the midst of all of that, her father is a serial entrepreneur, and one of the businesses that he owned was a staffing business. And so I realized that it'd be very difficult to raise a family on a layman's salary. So I tell friends, gosh, if I was a Baptist minister or a Jewish rabbi, I could have done that. I could have raised a family and been fine. But a Catholic lay person, yeah, the salary is just, you know, no. Not all that great. So I went down to talk to my father-in-law. My father-in-law introduced me to a gentleman that was out of Cincinnati that was putting these peer roundtable programs. He was interested in expanding, but not interested in financing the growth. So my father-in-law became the financial backer, and we agreed on a revenue share with the gentleman out of Cincinnati. And so there, drove down to Louisville, Kentucky, because he was based out of Louisville. And we were at the conference room table, and there were four facilitators, I think. I was one of four. And one guy says, "Hey, I want to facilitate the vice presidents of engineers." And another guy said, "Hey, I want to facilitate the CFOs." And another one says, "I want VP of operations." And my father-in-law looked at me and said, "Tom, the only thing that's left is staffing." and he had a little sales training thing that he did. So he had a 200, 400, 500, you know, names of staffing companies around the United States. And I, you know, at that point I hadn't even taken one business class.
Yeah. You know,
psychology, philosophy, theology, sociology, astronomy, you know, you name it. If it had an OLG on the end of it, I took it. So off we got started. And the very first roundtable, Lisa, I am proud to say the very first roundtable that I ever sponsored was in Erlanger, Kentucky. And you know where that is, right?
Yes.
In the shadows of the Cincinnati airport. It was a conference center that was owned by the Holiday Inn. And the company, a staffing company that attended the very first roundtable I ever facilitated, today, 30 years later, are still members in my roundtable.
Oh, what a testimony.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
That is awesome. That is awesome, Tom. Well, you know, just to my point earlier, you know, the value that you bring by facilitating these, you know, I told you earlier today, I was with the St. Louis CIO group. They have a mantra, Tom, and I, you know, you can't rip off and duplicate this unless you change the words a little bit, but they say the answer's in the room. Is there mantra? Oh,
nice. Nice.
You know, and the same thing goes for these roundtables. I mean, the value that you get from hearing from other people and the challenges that they've gone through and how did you make it through this and what are the best practices as it relates to X, Y, and Z. I think it's just so empowering, you know, for these CEOs.
The real benefit, frankly, the real benefit, I'm going to tell you, this is a true story. So we had five president roundtables come through Chicago in the month of June of this year. And I was facilitating one, and we've grown to 12 to 14 companies. And two things really quick about that. We had a gentleman that's first roundtable that he ever attended, and he's having a culture problem and in his organization. So, and we facilitate through a creative problem solving process that I was trained in by the grandfather of creative problem solving. But anyway, we facilitate him through this process, and we go through this where he unpacks the issue, and then we ask questions, and then, you know, we give responses and feedback and input and all that stuff. And we get done with the question phase of it, and we're ready to move on to responses. And one of the members says to him, "Tom, this is when you feel like you're sitting in your underwear." because of the vulnerability.
The vulnerability. You know? Right.
So then on the back end, my dear Emma is following up with another new member that was on the other side of the room. A week later, you know, he had been involved in a peer roundtable for 10 years or so, but he said, this other peer roundtable that I've been involved in 10 years, I've never seen people be so vulnerable in front of one another. And Lisa, that's real. I mean, you can get new ideas in a lot of places, mm-hmm. but who is going to tell you, who's going to get you to see or recognize the hidden assumptions that you have about your customers, about the politics, about your employees, about how people buy, about how we deliver services. We mm-hmm. all have assumptions, and most of the time we never talk about those assumptions. We never think about those. We just operate, and that's the magic that happens in these roundtables, is that those assumptions about whatever it is, they come out on the table, and they get massaged. They get mm-hmm. Ruminated upon. They get challenged in a very compassionate way. There's nobody beating anybody up. There's a lot of fun and bantering going on and all that other good stuff. But in the end of the day, these roundtables are more about leadership development than anything else. People walk out that door 2 days later, a day and a half later, in some way they're changed. They're mm-hmm. changed. And that's why, Lisa, that's why we've got multiple, many, many, many members that have been with us for more than 20 years. It's
right.
I've had members say, "Tom, I hate meetings, but your roundtable events are like retreats where I get re-energized."
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great?
It is great. You know, and I'm just thinking as you're talking, Tom, I think all the things that you've done, you know, master's in organizational development, your divinity degree, all of those things really are probably culminating in there to make them what they are, you know, but, you know, gosh, there's just
absolutely,
so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very true. That's very
yeah,
true.
I think so too. Well, you know, I'm going to talk about one more thing. And then we do need to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about a lot more, but you know, so you drew the short straw, you took over the staffing, but in 3 years, Tom, you grew your segment of, you know, you grew your segment of this enterprise to be 80% of the firm's revenues.
Correct. That's correct.
So you had to learn a lot. I mean, you jumped into this entrepreneurial wagon with both feet and you had to learn a lot. And one of the things, and I love this, I listened to an interview that you did. And you said, I had to learn how to sell. I had to learn how to sell. And I want to mention this because there may be leaders on the that are listening right now to this episode that might want to pick up this book. But you said that the book that really you read that really helped point you in the right direction is a book by Frank Betcher, How I Raised Myself from Failure to Success in Selling. And you just consumed that book. He was actually a pro baseball player and then got injured. Yeah, I kind of did a little research on Mr. Frank here. He played for the Cardinals. He actually played for the St. Louis Cardinals, which is awesome, but got injured and then had to go out and sell insurance. And in 10 months, he didn't sell one thing. He said, I had to learn how to figure this out. Now, I'm a big Dale Carnegie fan. A lot of our listeners may be too, right? Here's what Dale Carnegie says about this book. And this book was written in 1947, which is crazy. But the principles, I think, still hold true to this day. But here's what Dale Carnegie said about this book. The most helpful, inspiring book on salesmanship that I have ever read.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the book, though, that you said that you just consumed. And one of the things, Tom, you talked about is really paying attention to the metrics. Mm-hmm. And paying attention to say, okay, how many people am I going to have to reach out to before one person says yes? I mean, you know, when I was trained in sales, we called it the law of the funnel. It's the law of the funnel. I mean, how many contacts are you making? I'm telling you, those things still work today, you know, and sometimes we get away from those basics. But can you remember anything else? And I know it's been a long time ago. But can you remember anything else about that book that really stood out? One of the things he talks about is enthusiasm.
Oh my gosh, Lisa, what did he do? He went to the smartest, most successful people, knocked on their door and said, can you help me? And I still do that today with people.
Yes.
That was a big, I you know, for men. Hey, I'm going to build, what was that? Lilies of the Field. No, I'm going to build this church by myself, brick by brick, you know, and of course the community's not going to let them do that. I mean, that's the way we think a lot of times. Oh, no, mm-hmm. I'm going to build this thing by myself, brick by brick. Oh my gosh. I mean, that's painful. When you get a little bit more mature in your leadership, you reach out to people who are smarter, better, faster, which by the way, a lot of times are people that are younger than you, and being humble enough to say, hey, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That was a big lesson from that book.
Yeah.
Discipline, big lesson from that book. You know, I was in the office at 7 a.m. I had my call list by 7:15 or 7:20. I was calling by whenever. I mean, I had a quote unquote methodology down. It was a science. Selling selling to a certain point is a science. And but those were two. It's such an easy read. And
I would highly encourage our listeners, go out and get the book. And like I said, it was written in 1947. But you know, the principles that he outlines here, like the discipline, watching your metrics, being enthusiastic, you know, and he said, even if you're not enthusiastic, act enthusiastic and you'll become more enthusiastic. But why, if you're not enthused about your product or your service, why would anybody else be?
Exactly.
Right. And you don't need to make people crazy because of your enthusiasm, but you know, you do need to be passionate, you know, about what it is you're doing. So, you know, Tom, I've got pages and pages of notes here of more things I want to cover with you, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Tom Kosnick on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch-up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Tom Kozik. So Tom, we've talked a lot about staffing, but you know, you and I, we've been in this world. Now we also have solutions. So we're not only a staffing firm, but I do want to make it clear. We have, you know, several lines of business with a total solution for organizations as well. But we've both been in this business for about 30 years. And boy, has it changed. Because I know when we first started our business, Tom, it was faxing resumes. There was no Dice. There was no Monster. There was no Career Builder. There was hardly an internet. I mean, you know, it was really, and you said even, you can remember a time where couriers were like currying a resume to a hiring manager.
Correct. In downtown Chicago. That's exactly what we did. Yep.
So we've seen some change, haven't we?
Just think about the Sunday job ads. Do you remember that? The Sunday newspaper, how thick it used to be. And there was a big section on the help wanted signs. Oh my gosh, what a different world.
It is a different world. Now, technology, you know, has really, you know, brought about a lot of the change that we've seen. We never see paper resumes anymore. We do have the internet. We have all these search engines. We have, you know, even technology, AI, generative AI that's coming in, you know, to kind of change things. You know, what types of technologies are you seeing that really, you know, applicant tracking systems, you know, we didn't have applicant tracking systems back there. We have those kind of things now, but what kinds of technology are you seeing, Tom, that has really brought the most value to the people in your round table?
Yeah. So currently, Lisa, currently, for the candidate side, the SMS texting, I shouldn't say recently, this was actually pre-COVID, a client that is in the creative staffing world, and I went to go visit their office, and of course you walk through the bullpen and it's like a library. And I said to the owner, why are the recruiters not on the phones? He said, Tom, the texting is how we communicate now. Texting is how in the creative space, they don't answer their phones. They text with one another. So having some kind of SMS texting platform is critical to connecting with and engaging with candidates. And then, you know, there are a number of products that are on the market as well that are candidate engaging, where we get it, right? You buy something on Amazon, it gets delivered. 15 minutes after it gets delivered, you get a text or you get an email, your package has successfully been delivered. 4 hours later, were you happy with your delivery? You check into a hotel, by the time you get up to your room, you've got a text message on your things. Hey, please rate your check-in experience. And those are all quote unquote engagement tools to engage the candidate. So those are critical tools. On the hiring manager, the client side of things, LinkedIn, anything that you can do to and let me say alignment on LinkedIn, so that whatever the messaging is, that there's alignment with the messaging and the posts and everything that you're. Because what that just shows, the consistency communicates stability, and nobody wants to do business with a company that's unstable, right? So or a person that's unstable. Mm-hmm. So that's another, like everything we post on LinkedIn, which is an amazing tool. Everything we post on LinkedIn, it's got to meet a certain criteria of professionalism, or it doesn't go up. It's just, and I'm a stickler about all that. The other thing is rapid. I mean, this is really kind of new but AI, any kind of automation, anything that a human was doing that now you can do through AI. And there's a lot of stuff that can happen there. Mm-hmm. Onboarding, for example, activities, onboarding activities can happen through a website, through AI versus a person, a human that's sitting in an office somewhere which is a big thing. And then, the big new thing is ChatGPT, these language softwares that are coming out. So with either job postings, with resumes, with messaging, with blogging, it's just a mess. Trying to change up. There's AI out there now, Lisa, where you don't have to be a staffing company. You can be an HR manager working for a manufacturing plant or a hospital that'll say, oh, use this word instead of that word, and you'll get 28% more candidates responding to this ad. Post this ad at this time on these days, and you'll get a 35% increase in response rates. Those are the tools that not only my customers but your customers should be using.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All good stuff.
It is all good stuff. One thing that I have read a lot, though, Tom, and I know just from talking to people, technology is moving at such a rapid pace. Though people sometimes get a little bit technology weary.
Well, I call it tech fatigue, we're certainly experiencing that. Which, by the way, it's another our roundtable program, our in-person roundtable programs are organically growing. Why? Because the more technology speeds up, the less these executives are feeling behind. The more of a need it is to. I got to get to with some comrades of mine and like talk this thing out in a safe environment where I can talk this out and find out what other companies are doing. Mm-hmm. That's not just what I'm doing here at roundtables. You meet with CIOs. The CIOs are doing the same thing. They want to meet more with CIOs because it's getting, it's moving so fast with them.
So fast. Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, Tom, our listeners may not really understand the depth and the breadth of the staffing industry. And you and I both subscribe. And I know you've been on the boards of these and are very, very involved. But there's the American Staffing Agency Association, ASA. And then there's Staffing Industry Analysts that are two big organizations that collect a lot of data, right? And I was just reading SIA just put out a report, in 2022, the projected growth for IT staffing is about 5%. In 2024, it's going to be about 7%. But this is a $218 billion industry. The staffing. Yes. I don't know which piece, because when we're talking staffing, there's a lot of segments there. Healthcare, I think, is like one of the largest. And then you've got industrial.
Yeah, largest, yeah.
I think healthcare is the largest, but IT is up there too. IT, engineering, professional staffing, office, clerical, and so there's a lot of different segments there, but it's a big industry, about 13,000 staffing firms, I think. Is what I read. You may have a different number in the United States.
Yeah. And again, national association wise, NAPEO, National Association of Professional Employee Organizations. You have NAPS, National Association of Personnel Services. You have TechServe. You have ITServe. I mean, these are all national associations with hundreds of staffing companies as clients. And a lot of times they don't belong to more than one. I hear it depends on whether you include direct hire firms in that statistic or not. Mm-hmm. But You know, I've heard anywhere from 10 to 20,000 staffing firms, you know, across the United States, but 13,000 sounds about right. 218 billion in revenue and growing. And the other thing is that we are, the staffing industry is only 2% of the workforce. So if you, you know, most of the people working in the United States are, you know, employed by employers, mm-hmm. but there still is a certain percentage of contract employees, temporary employees. And on the manufacturing side, you know, with the ebbs and flows of their orders, you know, they need flexibility with labor force. And then IT, accounting and finance, engineering, Lisa, I mean, you're in it. It makes no sense. Oh, we need 25 IT guys to work on this project for 9 months. There's so many benefits to just have those resources through an IT staffing business than it is to for a company to hire those people on and then what do you do with them, you know, 9 months later when the project is finished? And the benefits for the client, the buyers are on. Goes on and on.
You're right. Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Tom, because, you know, for organizations and you know, the thing is, I've read the forecast is that it's not going to go away. I mean, it truly isn't. This contingent labor piece is a way for you to manage the ebbs and flows of your business. It's not going to go away. If anything, it's just going to continue to increase. But you've talked about, I'm glad that you brought that up, because there are advantages to the employer, to the organization. But you know what? I think there's a lot of advantages to the worker. You know, I mean, what have you seen as, you know, advantages to the worker? I think it,
oh my gosh, Lisa, come on. Back when I graduated, there were a lot of other recent graduates that ended up working for Accenture or actually at that time, I think Arthur Anderson was still around. Deloitte and Touche, PricewaterhouseCooper, all the big ones. What was the benefit of working there for 5, 6, 7 years? Well, I got inside 20 different companies in the course of, you know, whatever, X number of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, inside where I could see the workings of them. Well, the staffing company offers a candidate the exact same experience. I can work a number of jobs inside a number of different industry sectors and get a swath. I mean, what 22 or 23 year old kid, you know, coming right out of college, you have to get yourself into a number of work environments. Frankly, that's how you learn, develop, and grow. And that's how you develop your network as well. And the kids coming out of college now, they don't want to go work for one company for, you know, 20, 30 years. They want to work for 15 companies in the first 3 to 5 years of their working career. Frankly, I think it's smart. You get a wide exposure. You build your network. And staffing companies, really, they are. I learned this with the creative staffing guys, the creative staffing firms, that they really are talent managers. Well, Lisa, technology partner is a talent manager for a lot of the IT professionals in the St. Louis area that you all are representing, and. You know, from a marketing perspective, you got to talk to your marketing folks to market that. And all
right.
That. There's tons of benefits that for the candidate side that staffing companies offer.
I totally agree. And I will say that because sometimes people will say, oh, you know, it's not as stable. I'm like, no, building your tool set and building your tool belt, that's what's stable. Because if you are doing that, you are going to be employed because IT, you know, is not going to go away. So yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up. But Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, what's the statistic that 80 something percent of your next opportunity as a worker in the United States, it's 80 something percent of your next opportunity is going to come from somebody that you know or somebody that refers you into. Why would you not build your network? Right, Lisa?
It's so important. Yeah. there's another book that I'll recommend to you, Tom, on the networking. And Bob Titi is a guy that's written lots of books on questions, the questions that you ask. And there is a book called Networking All the Time, Everywhere, you know, with Everyone.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, and sometimes technology people don't think about a network, but it is so critical.
Oh my gosh.
To your future success. And just like you just talked about, you know, leaning in, other CEOs leaning in. I mean, you can do it that way. You can grow that way by having a network. But yeah, absolutely. It's so important and something that sometimes I think is overlooked. But, you know, Tom, I've got to ask you this. So like you are conducting these, you know, roundtables with hundreds of C-suite people, you know, what are some of the top of mind issues that are keeping these people up at night? Maybe two or three of those top of minds. And obviously you can't divulge anything that is confidential, but you know, in generalities, what are those top two or three and what are they doing to address those top of mind challenges?
Yeah, I would say that the number one, so we're dealing with economic buyers, right? They're concerned about the bottom line and the financial health and well-being of the organizations that they're ahead of. The number one is that margins are basically staying the same. So margins aren't magically going up. Margins are basically, and if you look over the last 25 years at some of the margin data in the staffing industry, it's actually we have experienced margin compression. So, yes. But over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, you know, it's been pretty much stable. So margins are staying stable. Of course, we're experiencing wage inflation of internal salespeople, recruiters, back office personnel. We're experiencing internal operating expenses. So now you're talking about technologies that you need to manage your business and grow your business, whether that's ATS systems or client and candidate engagement tools and job boards and all the rest. So those expenses are going up. Well, if margins are staying the same and expenses, internal expenses are going up, what gives? Net income. Net income goes down. Yeah. And mm-hmm. So what's keeping a lot of the men and women that are managing these organizations up? How can I run my organization more effectively? What are the ideas that I can utilize to run my company more effectively? And another way to look at this is, gosh, I mean, if we've got somebody that's generating $750,000 to $1 million of gross profit production on an annual basis, we're really excited about that. Well, Miss Lisa, I've got clients in the administrative clerical. You know what that is? That's like $5.32 hour, you know, raw dollar hour spreads. Recruiters that are doing, you know, $2 million, $1.8 million of gross profit production on an annual basis. Well, how are they doing that? They're doing that because they're utilizing certain technologies. They're some of the stuff that we were just talking about. They're using technologies for the onboarding process. They're using offshore services to get candidates in the queue and set up interviews for them so that their time, that 8 hours a day that they're working, is speaking, talking, and placing candidates, and less getting on the internet or job boards looking for resumes and things like that. So that's a big one, is how do I make my organization more efficient, more effective? Another piece that certainly the technology piece and the rapid changing with technology and it keeps them up at night. And there, so that, you know, we have a lot of quote unquote tech stack analysis going on, redesigning the tech stack to align with the business model that, you know, we're taking to the marketplace. So there's a whole group of issues around technology, from expense to alignment with business model to adoption, culture, getting internal employees to actually utilize the technology that we're investing in. It's just like our iPhones or your Androids, you know, you end up using 20% of it. It's you walk in places and, you know, the employees are only using 20%. And then I, you know, the third thing would be the whole marketing thing. So you know, a few years back, I was on one of these podcasts and I asked the question, hey, when did the chief marketing officer become more important than the chief revenue officer in a sales organization? And of course, everybody stopped, you know, I forget where I was when I said that. Everybody stopped and looked at me and said, gosh, that is so accurate. That's so true. You know, our because when you think about all the candidate, the website, the messaging, the candidate engagement, the management of the database, all the marketing materials, all that stuff, it all rolls up into the CMO. Well, when you think about on the sales side, client engagement, presentations, videos, LinkedIn training. Who's it roll up into? Your CMO.
Oh, right.
Where's the VP of sales?
Yeah.
So it's
wow, Tom. Anyway. We could probably do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah,
you know? We really could. We really, really could, because that's you know, it is a big issues. Yeah, for sure. Well, you know what? I've got a lot more questions here, but we've run out of time. I do want to tell our listeners, though, if you want to reach out to Tom, I know he would love to hear from you. Reach out to him on LinkedIn. He's very active. Find out more about his company. He's a marathon runner. How many marathons have you ran now?
30
marathons. And so if you want to learn more about that, you know, reach out to him. He also is a huge believer in silent retreats, which we could probably do a podcast on that. But I do have to ask you, Tom, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, I thank you for asking me that. And every leader, if they are honest with themselves, knows that there are gaps. Every leader, if they are honest with themselves, knows there are gaps. And it takes honesty with yourself, and it takes humility to address those gaps. And it also takes curiosity to address those gaps, and it takes compassion. So just the being honest with you, but first of all, just being humble enough to recognize that there are gaps, and then humility, curiosity, and compassion. In the end, Lisa, if you want to grow your business, if you want to grow your department, you personally have to grow. And if you're not growing, no one else is growing around you. So
yeah,
that's really that disposition, that attitude, that persona, that's the something extra.
I love it. That was just beautifully put. Great advice. I completely concur. So Tom, wow, this has been so much fun, my friend.
Thank you
so much for spending some time with me. And I know that, I know your insights and wisdom is going to help our listeners. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.